This week is Yom Ha'atzmaut. All over the world, they're celebrating the 70th year since Hakamas HaMedina. What to celebrate about. So I thought maybe I'll share some anecdotes. There was a sefer written in the early 1800s by a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. His name of the sefer is Kol HaTor. In Shir HaShirim it says, Kol HaTor Nishma V'Yatzenu. It's the springtime, and the birds are chirping, and everything, the grass is green, and it's time for Yitzias Mitzrayim, and the Rebbe Shem loves the Jewish people, and he takes us out of time. So this sefer, Kol HaTor, is all about the Gulu HaSida. What's going to be as Moshiach that kun? So the Gemara, we know about Moshiach ben David. Mel HaMashiach means going to have Moshiach b'Shemen HaMishcha. Shemen HaMishcha, Shemen Mishcha's Kodesh, is only if you're a Melech from the Malchit Beis David. So since the end of the Beis Rishon, we haven't had a Melech from the Malchit Beis David. So all the other kings who are not from Malchus Beis David, they have imitation Mashiach. They have Mashiach B'Shem and Afarsimon, parsimony oil. I remember years ago, around 20 years ago, there was headlines on the first page in the New York Times that they found a jug of parsimony oil from the days of Yoshke. And you know what parsimony oil is? State the New York Times on page 1. This is what they used to anoint the Davidic kings. So that's exactly a mistake. This is what they used to anoint those kings who are not from the Malchus Beis David. Those Malchus Beis David, they didn't use Shemen HaFarsman. They used Shemen Mishcha's Kodesh, the real Shemen HaMishcha. So the Melech HaMashiach is called Mashiach because Mashiach B'Shemen Mishcha's Kodesh is only for the Malchit Beis David. So that's going to be the Mashiach Ben David. Then the Gemara, in one place, in the end of Sukkah, talks about there's going to be Mashiach Ben Yosef. He's going to be before Mashiach Ben David. He's going to be killed. And that's going to pave the way for Mashiach Ben David. The Gemara never explains what it's all about. Apparently the Zohar has a lot. Much more. The Gemara only has mentioned in one place, the end of Sukkah. The Zohar has a lot. So the Vilna Gaon developed many ideas in respect to Moshiach ben Yosef, and he told over the Talmidim, and one of the Talmidim wrote it all up in the Sefer Kol HaTor. And he quotes from the Vilna Gaon, if I would have been brought into the world only to develop all of these ideas, he felt that this was the area of Torah that he developed more than any other area. And then he said he thought he was Moshiach ben Yosef, whatever that means. He wasn't killed by anybody. You don't think he was killed. So I don't know what that means. Anyway, so in this Sefer, Kol HaTor, he singles out 3 days that are going to be very crucial with respect to the Gula, but it doesn't give you the dates. The 3 dates that he singles out are Heir Vavir and Chav Chesir. But he doesn't say the dates. He gives you Teferish HaBechesed and so on. Got a hook in the Siddur, but that's what it corresponds to. Heyir, Vavir, and Chav Chesir Yom Yerushalayim. So one of the Rabbanim who lives here in Queens, Professor Horowitz, Ablezer Horowitz, he said he was brought up in Eretz. He remembers when they had Hakamas HaMedina, the British mandate officially was over at midnight on Friday night. And Erev Shabbos was Heir. And officially, the Medina was supposed to be declared midnight and Vavir. But some of the people who signed the declaration of the Medina was Shom Shabbos. They didn't want to sign on Shabbos. They signed, it was illegal. So they signed on Friday. And Friday was still under the British. They signed on Friday. So Rabbi Yanke Moshe Chalap was dancing in the street. That's what he remembers. Rabbi Chalap didn't know this. He heard it from Professor Horowitz. Rabbi Yanke Moshe Chalap was the Rosh Yeshiva Merkos Harav. He was dancing from joy. Now he knows Pshat and the Kol HaTor about Heir Vavir, because it was really supposed to be Vavir, but because of Chilul Shabbos, they signed it the day before. The war began right away. The war began on Friday. The Arabs didn't care that the mandate was still until midnight. Once the Jews declared the Medina, so they started the war right away. So he said he understands Heir, he does know what Chav Chesir is all about. He didn't live so long to see Yom Yerushalayim. Chav Chesir was Yom Yerushalayim. That was very interesting. Then I remember years ago, talking here in Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld Shul, I was once there on Yom HaShoah, so they showed a documentary film, The Long Way Home. Why did it take so long after the Second World War was over for the Jews to come to Eretz Yisrael? So they explained, it was a documentary. The British wouldn't let them in, and they had all these Jews in the DP camps. And they distributed a questionnaire to them. Write, what are your choices? What's your first choice? Where do you want to go? First country, second country. What's your first choice, second choice, or choice? Many of them wrote only 2 choices. The first choice was Palestine. Second choice was crematoria. if you don't let us go to Palestine, burn us alive in the cream tent. No one wanted to take them in. So it took the longest time. So this was a documentary showing everything. So just Thanksgiving, this past Thanksgiving, so everyone was celebrating the 70th anniversary of the United Nations Commission that decided to partition Palestine to give half to the Jews. So they wrote in the papers, they didn't write also, they wrote in the papers that the vote was supposed to take place the day before Thanksgiving on Wednesday, but for some reason or another, it was postponed to Monday. So they didn't explain, they left out a whole chunk of history. The vote was supposed to be on Wednesday, Erev Thanksgiving, and the people from the Jewish Agency looked around, they realized they don't have a majority, they're not going to win. So in the documentary, so they have this, so they asked one of the representatives of one of the countries, can you please filibuster, so the vote will be postponed till Monday, because they're not going to meet on Thanksgiving, and on the weekend they're not going to meet, and they hope that by Monday they'll have the majority. So he asked, I remember the documentary, he asked how long they want me to filibuster. So he said, 1 hour. So he said, cinch, not a problem. 1 hour, not a problem. So he filibustered and they had to postpone the vote. So then they said they're going to have to get the right. So one of the balabatim in Boston who used to drive Rabbi Soloveitchik around told over this story. The people from the Jewish Agency contacted Rabbi Soloveitchik. He must speak to Cardinal Cushing. I think he was the cardinal in Boston. And according to the chukim of the Catholics, the poisek achron for 11 South American Catholic countries was the Boston cardinal. Whatever he says goes. So Rabbi Soloveitchik has to speak to Cardinal Cushing to convince him before Monday that he has to give a psak. So he called Cardinal Cushing. He had a relationship with him in the past. And he said he has something very, very urgent. He has to speak to him. So he says, I didn't prepare my drosha for Thanksgiving yet. Does it have to be now? Does it have to be today? So he said, no, but it has to be before Shabbos. So he met with him, and he gave a psak to the 11 South American countries that were on the committee that they have to vote for Hakon Samadhi. So I was a little boy. I didn't know anything that was going on. So one of the rebbes in the yeshiva, Rabbi Rum, told me that at that time, when the commission, the majority on Monday, when they had the vote, so all the South American countries voted for Hakon Samadhi. So he said, no one understood why. So he said, Argentina, I think, was controlled by one Peron. So I think his brother-in-law was Jewish. And another one had a mother-in-law who was Jewish. Some of them had Jewish relatives. But the other 8-9 countries, no one understood why in the world did they vote for Jacob and Samadina. So the reason why was because the cardinal from Boston was explained by Rabbi Soloveitchik. Why they have to vote for the Hakom Samadina? Because the Jews have no place to go. They're sitting in the DP camps, and they're writing the first choice is Palestine, second choice is crematoria, because it was terrible there. The life there was terrible. And then they tell a story. Rabbi Abba Zions used to be a rabbi, and he was a rabbi in the Bronx, and Leon Wells' father-in-law. So he used to be a rabbi in the Bronx, and he taught in the college. He taught in Yeshiva College. So he was born in Brisk. He didn't learn by Rabbi Berl Soloveitchik, but as a child he used to play with Rabbi Berl Soloveitchik, the children of Rabbi Berl Soloveitchik. So later in life, when he was an old man, he lived in the Bronx. He used to go visit Eretz Yisrael sometimes in the summer. He would always go visit Rabbi Berl Soloveitchik to talk about the old times. So, and once in a while he would write essays. He would write in Yiddish, he would publish essays in Yiddish and Hebrew. So one occasion he printed an essay in Hebrew that Rabbi Berl Soloveitchik, the Tana, son of Rabbi Berl, told him over. That towards the end of Mechemet HaShechruer, the Jewish army ran out of ammunition. I think this is this part of the story is at Dov Yadur. They ran out of ammunition. So the part that's not Yadur is that Ben-Gurion had a Shaila. So he called up somehow, I don't think Rabbi Berl Soloveitchik had a telephone, must have called the next door neighbor. He contacted Rabbi Berl Soloveitchik on the telephone, and he asked him, what should we do? Should we surrender to the enemy today? Or should we make believe that we have ammunition? And then they'll keep on shooting. We're not going to respond. Then they'll realize, so tomorrow, we'll have to surrender tomorrow. So Rabbi Berl thought, when we surrender to the Arabs, they'll kill everybody. So he said, well, you're crazy. You're going to surrender today? They'll kill us all today. Wait till tomorrow. We'll live another day. We'll eat fill in another day. We'll dive another day. And on that day, that's when the plane came from Czechoslovakia with the X-ray ammunition. And then they won the war. because of the postponing one day. So Rabbi Beryl Soloveitchik was telling this over to Rabbi Abba Zayn's in Yiddish, but he printed it over in Hebrew in an essay, I think, in Hadoar. So Rabbi Beryl Soloveitchik said, "Nu mi yitzila ta medina? Abba sheli? Abba sheli yitzila ta medina? Rabbi Beryl saved the medina. If Ben Gurion would have done what he wanted, he would have surrendered the day before. We would have lost the whole medina. Abba sheli yitzila ta medina." And I remember just a fourth anecdote. I remember the Mizrahi used to have their own newspaper in Eretz Yisrael. They closed down 20 years ago. So I remember once I was in Kerem Yavna, they had some old newspapers there in the apartment where I was staying. So one of the newspapers, apparently they had been writing about, before HaKamas HaMdina in 1948, how many Rabbanim before HaKamas HaMdina, how many were against? So they're trying to ascertain what was the position of the Panav Yisharov. What did he think? Should they establish a Medina? Like Arpenkin was very opposed. He said, you're going to make a Medina, it's going to cause more anti-Semitism, it's going to cause more bloodshed. He didn't think it's a smart idea, but many thought that we're going to save the lives of all the Jews in the DP camps. So they asked, what was Rav Kahneman's position? So someone wrote, I learned in Panevich at that time, and the yeshiva owned a lot of property, they owned a big forest, and it wasn't, they didn't chop down the trees, they didn't make dormitories yet, it was just a gigantic forest. So before 1947, the Bochum and the Yeshiva noticed that there were some people roaming around in the forest who were hiding there in the forest. They didn't know who they were. So they told the Panav Yisharov. So he wasn't afraid, so he walked in. It turned out they were from the Irgun, or from the terrorists who were trying to pressure the British to keep their promise to make a Medina. So Rav Kahneman had a conversation with them, and he asked them, is there really going to be a Medina? He said, absolutely, there's going to be a war. It's going to be a fierce war. Many lives will be lost, but there's going to be a Medina Bevadai. So what are you doing here? They're hiding from the British. The British will catch him. They'll kill him, because they were bombing hotels and bombing trains and so on. They'll kill him. So they were hiding there. So he told them they should stay there. And then they said, so how do they get food? They should be afraid to go to the city. You've got to go to the city. The British police may recognize them. So he told them, whenever you're hungry, just walk into the Chadar Ochel. Don't come in all 10 people at one time. Come in 4 people at a time. Make believe that you belong here. They had Goyish workers. They didn't wear yarmulkes. They were Jewish. They didn't wear yarmulkes. They said, come in and make believe that you work here. Don't be embarrassed. Don't be inhibited or anything. Come sit down. But not all 10 people at a time. 4 people to sit down on your own table. Don't carry on conversations with the Talmidim so they won't find out who you were. So this fellow wrote this letter to the editor. You see, the Rav Kahneman was helping the terrorists bring about this result to pressure the British to establish the Medina. There were religious Jews who were involved every step of the way. Rabbanim and religious Jews were involved every step of the way. So everything is fascinating. All the Nisim and the Flores are all fascinating. We have a lot to celebrate. Okay.
Not too many rabbis could see what I said.